Episode 1135, a Criterion Challenge or Dead.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono, and we just had some impromptu movie time together.
What an experience. First of all, I'm there watching this great movie. I was running short on time compared...
Where's there?
I'll get there. I was running a little bit short on time, so Ben ended up having to join me for the last 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Plus, we got some family interruptions. I saw you taking pictures. What were you taking pictures of?
Well, it's just, you know... So, here's the setup, everyone. As I pull up and I park along the street, and you know, your minivan is out there, and as I'm walking up, I notice first that the van is on and somebody's sitting in it, and then the next thing I notice is that it's you sitting in it, and you roll down the window and say, "Come sit in my van,"
right.
Which everything about this is atypical
of a typical podcasting
a typical podcasting night. So I do, and I walk over, and you have it's not built into the van, but looked like a custom DVD screen that you can...
It wasn't custom. It's like, you know how you get those dual screens that you strap to the back of the van?
I guess that's what I mean. It's not part of your minivan.
Yes. It's like for the kids, basically. But
yeah.
I had unhooked it from the seat, and I was just using it in the front
seat. You have it in the front, and you are around the final portion of Ordette.
I mean,
which is this great movie that we're going to be talking about. One of my favorite movies.
For the Easter season.
So for people who haven't seen Ordette, stay around for the story of Matt watching it, at least. But great movie. I love it. It's a favorite of mine. And I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, this is how we're going to watch this thing, huh?
I guess this is happening.
And I'm thinking, because I know what part you had, and I won't spoil anything, but It's the emotional core of the film, and then A, you're watching it in your car. B, as we're watching it, as you said, your children are coming out. The garage door opens. Your wife starts walking toward us. You say, "Oh no, she found me."
that was a joke. She knew where I was, but I thought that'd be funny for you to hear as we're just sitting there in the driveway.
You took a phone call from your brother.
Oh man, I forgot to call him back.
I think he can wait. He can wait. Okay. That's when I took my picture.
My kids were leaving for Bible study. The phone rings at the same time. My wife is coming. And we're at the moment of the movie.
The thing the whole movie is leading up to.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
but still, great movie.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did really like it. So yeah, I'll just back up a little bit before you got there. I just through different family things happening over the course of the last week, didn't have a lot of free time for viewing this movie, which I checked out from the library. I brought here for post credits to talk about some other movies I have from the library, so you can direct me to what you want me to watch next. But so I have this movie. I've had it on my radar to try to finish it up before today.
Yeah.
Guess what? Today arrives, and I'm just trying to think. Did I start it this morning? I think I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I watched this whole thing all throughout this day. Just any like little times I could sneak away, lunch break, end of the workday, those kind of things. So
this is part of the Criterion Challenge that we've been doing on the Extra Feed, where you're watching Criterion Collection movies I've recommended.
Your top 110 films.
Yeah. I think I do probably need to go through there again and add in a couple that I've forgotten. But
yeah, let's just quickly plug the Patreon feed, which is at patreon.com/thesci-fi-christian, where we're going through tons of movies.
Yes.
We usually will say the Criterion Challenge. And then the film we're going to most focus on, but we'll also maybe mention a few others. Today, that's not the case. Today, just Ordette.
And this is also the second entry in our O trilogy.
That's right. It's the triple feature we've got. Well, why don't you go ahead and...
We had a great movie in Oppenheimer.
I did that last week.
We have an even greater movie today in Ordette.
And then next week...
we have the greatest movie of all in Octopussy.
Next week, we're going to talk James Bond, but over on the Patreon feed.
Right.
So, yes. Well, let's just get to it. This is all the preface. Let's get into the...
So, it sounds like you enjoyed it.
I did. I really did. I know the end, we were kind of doing some jokes back and forth, and it was weird that we were watching it in my van.
It was a weird experience.
I did want to make when you're there, I'm just so tempted to make funny comments.
Right.
But I held myself back because...
I think you did pretty good.
Here we are watching this.
I think you did pretty good.
This great movie. But yes, it was good. So now we're entering spoilers, everybody.
Yes.
Ben, why did you think of this movie as being something that would be good for the Easter season?
Well, so if people are still listening and haven't seen it, which is probably some because it's a little bit obscure, you know, it's you have this setup of this family on the farm, and you have these three sons who are living with their father, three grown sons, one kind of on the edge of adulthood, but the other two definitely grown. There is a Brothers Karamazov element here, which I can come back to in a second, but the youngest son is wanting to get married. The oldest son is married, has a wife who's pregnant with their third, and the middle son thinks he's Jesus Christ. So it's a great setup. So throughout the movie, then the wife of the oldest son dies in childbirth, and at the climax of the film, she is resurrected.
Well, wait a second. The wife and the son die.
The wife and the baby. The baby dies. The baby is not resurrected.
Yeah, but so the wife dies. She's dead for days.
Yes.
They're at the funeral.
And then Johannes, who is the son who thinks he's Jesus Christ, comes back to the family. He's been away. His sanity is restored, but yet his faith is still where it was, and he performs this miracle.
So he no longer thinks he's Jesus.
Correct.
But he does still have miraculous powers. He's able to... Well, just the
His
way
faith
that,
is, yeah.
Just the way that other people in the Bible are able to perform miracles
exactly.
that aren't Jesus, that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah. And Johannes is, I mean, we talk about like the resurrection is, so that's why it's an Easter movie and why it's so great for this time of year. And that's the beating heart of the film, which is the entire portion we were watching in your car. But as far as the central character, I mean, Johannes is such a great character mm-hmm. in this movie. And, you know, I've watched this movie a number of times now, and you do kind of always, even though at the end his wits are restored, there is this element of, when you're watching it, is he really crazy? Because he does see things, and he's able to tell things supernaturally.
I did not think he was crazy.
Yeah.
I think that he's not Jesus, but something in his transformation to this deep man of faith, or maybe a man of deep faith.
Yeah.
At first, it did kind of have him messed up, but then by the end, like you said, he retains this close connection to the spiritual realm while also recognizing I'm not actually Jesus Christ.
Right, and I think that's what I mean by is he crazy, is that he's certainly asserting that he's Jesus, and so there is this element in the film.
Early in the film.
Yeah.
But by the end, he knows he's not
by
Jesus.
By the very end.
Yes.
But there's an element even throughout some of his scenes in the middle, which are almost darkly funny. When these horrible things are happening and Johannes just kind of keeps wandering through the room,
yes.
spouting off.
I mean, but, he can see death.
He can see death.
So that means there is something happening that's real.
And I think the film works well to make you almost question, could he be an incarnation?
I
obviously
did.
Within the world of the film, it's not theologically accurate, but could he be some kind of incarnation of Christ?
Yeah, so I'm just going to... I know we're kind of joking about it. I know the ending wasn't ideal. I know I was watching this whole movie in my car.
Yeah.
5 stars still.
It's one of my favorites.
And something that stuck with me, or kind of struck me, I should say, is last year we read a book that we both really like called Heart of the Matter.
The Heart of the Matter.
By Graham Greene.
Yep.
This, and they're not the same story, but it... The same thing I liked about that book, I liked about this movie. Do you see a connection between those two things?
I think I do, and that one does have a darker ending, but they're both having to deal with sort of this crisis of faith element that's taking place.
I love the conversations. I want you to continue, but I'll just quickly say I love the conversations where they're diving into, do we believe in miracles?
Right.
How is your faith different than my faith?
Yeah. And, you know, we were kind of... making fun of this pastor character who's there at the end of the movie because these are all, I guess, I think they'd be Lutheran, but various Protestant sects and within the Danish community. And so this pastor is just very inadequate to the movie. You had said he seems like a villain. I don't think he's a villain.
Not a villain, but right. He was not helpful. And
no.
If this is a movie that really centers on faith, him being the head of a church,
yeah,
and him being having a lack of faith makes him a sort of villain.
Poo-pooed miracles.
He's not evil.
Yep.
But yes, exactly.
He's inadequate to his calling. Mm-hmm. I think is maybe one way to put that.
So I had asked you in person, or I guess I just had given you the heads up I was going to ask you about this. So here it is. We have the two father figures.
Yep.
They both are men of faith at different levels and in different ways. Are you able to describe to me the differences between their faith journeys?
So probably not on the micro level, because I do think there's some really specific cultural things going on
that we are missing.
You know, schisms in Protestant faiths and that type of the in that part of the world, and that those cultures in particular, you know, the Dutch, the Finlanders, the Swedish, Scandinavia, it's kind of all of that. They're a little, if you dig into that history, which I have, at least a little bit, there's some really interesting, we're very quick to schism type of things. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that, so the other father we're referencing, for people who are maybe just listening along, is the youngest son wants to marry this girl, Anna, who is of a different faith, which means basically the same faith, but just this other part of the schism that's taken place.
Yeah, it's almost like Christianity with just a different vibe.
Yeah, yeah. So the other one, the Peter is the, you know, the other father, Anna's father. What I have read about is that he's representing a version of Protestantism that focused on converting existing Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, very small. And I think they're depicted there as having almost a house church. They're not depicted as having a real building. So there is this kind of, even within what wouldn't be huge, you know, mega churches by any stretch of the imagination, they are very much a sect within this larger community.
So Peter the Tailor, who is the father of the girl that the main family wants
yeah.
to marry.
Anders, the youngest son, wants to marry.
Well, since we're not going into all the characters' names, it gets a little bit difficult. But he, the Tailor, the father, seemed early in the film almost as like maybe the best guy.
Yeah.
But maybe as it went on, maybe no one was the best guy. But I guess what I meant by that is you said he was almost like a missionary to Christians. So I kind of thought initially maybe the main family that owned the farm, they loosely believe but aren't really practicing Christians. And this guy wanted to help strengthen their faith. And so he had this mission to, yeah, he's okay with them getting married if their faith starts to line up. And so he sees it as his mission to kind of convert that whole family over into a deeper faith.
I think that would be his perspective, but I don't think there's any implication that the main family is not practicing. Okay. It's yeah.
But then by the end, I can't remember the exact line, but in one of the scenes that you and I watched together, there was some dialogue that indicated they're now recognizing what we both believe
yes,
is enough.
There's a reconciliation between them, which is, you know, there's a very eucatastrophe element to this film that I really, really like, and that you have all of these different pieces that are out there, and the way that it comes together in those closing scenes is very, very powerful.
I did really love it.
Yeah. So I mentioned
it's
the
hard
brothers.
To tell you, like, if no, I had just seen
I
it alone,
understand.
If I'd seen it alone, I think you would just accept me saying
yes.
that and we'd just move on.
I understand.
I feel like I have to really say,
you have to sell
trust
me on
me.
It. You have to sell me on it.
Trust me. I really liked it.
You know, the Brothers Karamazov thing is interesting because you have three sons there, and you have, there's a little bit of that dynamic here as well. It's not a one for one, especially in the third son, Anders. And in this case, it doesn't really pay. I think it's Dmitri and Brothers. But you do have this in Brothers, you have Alyosha, who is this holy fool, comes out of into the world from a monastery at the beginning of the novel. And then you have Ivan, his atheist, nihilistic brother, who are the conflict between them becomes the philosophical core of that novel. you don't exactly have that same level of intensity here, but you do still have that holy fool character in Johannes, who's just sort of wandering around being Jesus-y, and nobody's quite sure what to do with Johannes. And then you have Michael, who is the oldest brother, who doesn't have a faith. Now, unlike Ivan, where Ivan is almost gleefully nihilistic about it in Brothers, I think Michael recognizes his lack, and it's a source of regret for him throughout the novel, or throughout the film.
His wife wants him to, yes, to, because she seems to have a deeper faith. She, yes, wants him to come on board, and he's not able.
Yes.
Like, he's not able to get himself there.
And then, at the end, he does. And so, you still have some of that, those brothers' interactions, just with a slightly different tone in here. But yeah, I love this movie. It's been a little while since I'd watched it. I watched it a couple weeks ago with my kids, and right on Easter weekend, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm glad you liked it.
All right, is that all we got for this one?
Well, we got to go through these.
All right, I'll hit the music. Since we're all in on spoilers here, at the very end, I wanted to make a joke with you so bad, but I knew we're at a very important scene as she's resurrected. Do you know what I'm going to joke about?
The zombie?
Total zombie. Total zombie. So I'm not the first one to think of that.
Well, I mean, I think that's a fairly common resurrection joke.
No. She started eating him.
Oh, and she's like kissing
him. Her kisses were not gentle kisses. Oh. Her kisses were
I've interpreted that as passion.
That was a little chewy. And then they just kind of zoom in on her eyes. I mean, I'm either thinking zombie or vampire here.
Yeah.
But I didn't go there because I know this is a favorite movie of yours.
I admire your restraint.
So thank you. So there it is.
Okay. I would have taken the joke, but yeah.
So I only have four. I checked out early on from the library, early on in the Criterion Challenge, tons of movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm down to only four now. So,
and I do have one I can bring for you.
You can read them out loud.
So that's Tunes of Glory, starring Alec Guinness. You have A Face in the Crowd, which, Andy Griffith is in that.
All right.
Last Year at Marienbad.
And I just became aware of this. Sorry, I shouldn't say it that way. I saw this movie commented on somewhere else, and they referred to it as sort of a surreal movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think you ever told me that. That would have been something that would move it up on the list. But do you find this to be a surreal movie?
I very much do.
Okay. Well, that's something I look forward to. And then this, I'm pretty sure, is going to be your number one pick.
Yeah, Barry Lyndon. So if I had to rank him here in terms of best to worst, not necessarily the order you should watch him in, because I think they're all good. I would say I like all of them. I love three of them.
Okay.
And then one of them's in my top.
Yeah, just give your personal rankings. How would you rank these movies?
So number four, Facing the Crowd. It's a good movie. It's an interesting movie. It didn't blow me away, but I did like it quite a bit. Tunes of Glory is really, really good. I think it's Alec Guinness is phenomenal in it. The way that it kind of has tones of comedy in pieces and then gets darker throughout. It's a really good movie. And, you know, for we've said this in other contexts, but people who know Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan, it unlocks another aspect of his much larger career. Yeah, Last Year at Marienbad is fantastic. It is surreal, but not maybe quite in the way that you would expect.
Okay.
More of just a surreal feeling to it. It takes place at a hotel. There are shots in there that feel to me very influential on something like The Shining. It's not horror, but just in the way that this watches the hotel. It's a movie that more than any of the other four, you need to take on its own terms and just accept what it's doing, as you have to do with surrealism. And then Barry Lyndon is the most beautiful movie ever made.
Yeah, so listeners, the reason I wanted to do that here at the end of this episode is just to give you a tease of what we'll be talking about over on the Patreon feed here in the coming months. Although, I guess if I'm being honest, I could see Barry Lyndon appearing here on the main feed. You'd love that movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie. The other one that I was going to bring to you, because I upgraded to the Criterion 4K, so I have a spare Blu-ray, is I didn't realize you'd watched, maybe we talked about it and I just forgot, but I didn't realize you'd watched Les Samurai last fall.
I did. We did mention it.
Okay, because I just rewatched it this weekend.
Okay, yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah,
so
that's a good one.
Another movie that's kind of in that same vein, same director, is Le Cercle Rouge.
I haven't seen that one yet.
No, so I have that.
Okay.
It's a heist movie.
Okay.
But yeah, save, you know, Les Samurai kind of has that just, it's just cool.
It is cool. I love the Criterion Challenge, and it just, It's exposing me to films that maybe I would have gotten to eventually, but it's sort of, it's causing me to fast track them.
Yeah.
So this has been fun for me, and I love it. I mean, how many movies are there total in the Criterion Collection?
We're a little over 1,200 right now.
So it was nice for you to, I mean, 100 sounds like a lot, but when you're talking about 1,200 films,
yeah,
for Ben to get it down to 110 for us, I mean, that's very
110
doable.
And counting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to do it in 1 year. We'll just do it over the next few years.
It's the ones that I recommend. I'd probably recommend more than that, but
yeah,
the cream of the crop, according to me.
All right, listeners, that's all from here. I'm Matt Edison.
And I was kind and didn't put Sallow in there, so you're welcome.
And we're the Sci-Fi Christians. Right. Signing off.
Right, goodbye.